Attention, attention, this is History Lost in Time.
And welcome to episode 69 of the History Lost in Time podcast. This podcast is available in German and English and can be found on YouTube, Spotify, Podcast.de, Blue Sky and Instagram. There's also a music-based partner project on YouTube called HLIT AI Music.
The topic of this episode.
In this episode, I would like to introduce another Chancellor of the Weimar Republic, the non-partisan Hans Luther, who appears in German history more as the savior of the mark than as Chancellor, due to his currency reform of 1923. His term in office was quite short, but was marked by some crucial domestic and foreign policy events of the Weimar era. He is considered the most successful finance minister in German history and earned a reputation as a specialist in monetary affairs and fiscal consolidation.
Political agenda and background.
None.
The sources that were used.
Source 1. Bernd Braun, The Chancellors of the Weimar Republic, Kohlhammer Publishing House, Stuttgart 2013. Source 2. Hans Mommsen, Rise and Fall of the Weimar Republic, 1918-33, Ulstein Propyläen, Berlin, 1998. Source 3, Nadine Rossol, Benjamin Ziemann, Upheaval and Abyss, The Handbook of the Weimar Republic, WBG, Darmstadt, 2021, and as usual, supplementary online sources. Hans Luther was born in Berlin on March 10, 1879. His family was wealthy and upper middle class. His father owned a timber trading company. Thus, Hans Luther grew up richer and more privileged than any other chancellor of the Weimar Republic. His youth and education reflected this upper middle class lifestyle. Private tutoring, education at a classical gymnasium, which is a type of secondary school, piano lessons, and frequent visits to a photographer's studio. Even as a teenager, he was able to travel to Austria, Switzerland, and Norway. In 1897, he graduated from school at the top of his class. He studied economics in Geneva, Kiel, and Berlin, and received his doctorate in 1904. In 1907, he became an administrative official in Magdeburg, working as a city councillor specializing in legal matters. This position brought him into contact with many local politicians and high-ranking officials. Unlike many of his fellow chancellors, he did not become active in political parties but pursued a non-partisan administrative career. During this time, he earned a reputation as a diligent and level-headed analyst. In February 1913, he became managing director of the Prussian Association of Cities, and 2 months later of the German Association of Cities as well. He was now, in effect, the lobbyist for the cities in the German Empire. He moved to Berlin to be able to carry out his work effectively. With the outbreak of the First World War in 1914, he began working at the Reich Grain Office. This office was responsible for supplying the population not only with grain, but also with other foodstuffs, clothing, and fuel, such as wood and coal. In May 1918, he became mayor of Essen. This position is not comparable to the mayoral position in Essen today. No offense, Essen, but back then the Krupp Arms Manufacturing Plant, one of the world's most important arms companies, was located there. Therefore, whoever was mayor of Essen was the highest ranking civilian official in one of the main arms manufacturing centers of the German Empire. Hans Luther remained unaffiliated with any political party. This decision is attributed to the fact that as a boy he found it difficult to cope with the heated political disputes between his left liberal father and his conservative uncle, men he both admired. The partisan conflicts deterred him, which is why he kept his distance from them as much as possible. He himself, however, was close to right liberal circles, which is why he voted for the National Liberal Party in the German Empire and the German People's Party DVP in the Weimar Republic. While he wasn't close to DVP leader Stresemann, he could most readily identify with the party's platform. From 1927 to 30, he was even briefly a party member, but resigned when he became head of the Reichsbank. More on that later. Luther skillfully steered the city of Essen through the November Revolution of 1918 and the period of the Red Ruhr Army following the Kapp Putsch of 1920. He succeeded in maintaining the population's food supply and mediating between the radical workers' councils and the Krupp management. He was considered a Republican of the mind, meaning he upheld the constitution but was a Democrat in spirit, not in heart. Due to his successful work in Essen, he had long been considered a candidate for a ministerial post, and finally in November 22, Wilhelm Kuno persuaded him to relinquish his mayoral position and instead join Kuno's cabinet as Reich Minister for Food and Agriculture. He held this position until October 23, when he moved to the Ministry of Finance. When hyperinflation gripped the country in 1923, it hadn't actually been Luther's primary responsibility to deal with it. The actual lead lay with the Ministry of Finance, not the Ministry of Agriculture. However, Luther showed initiative, as page 71 of the Reich Chancellor's book demonstrates. There it states, "In this situation, Hans Luther, still Minister of Food, took the initiative and, building on preliminary considerations by Member of Parliament Karl Helferich of the DNVP and the overly hesitant Finance Minister Rudolf Hilferding of the SPD, drafted the concept of the Rentenmark. When the SPD left the Grand Coalition, Hans Luther took over the Ministry of Finance and swiftly implemented his plan. On November 15, 1923, the Rentenmark was launched with the opening of the Rentenbank. A few days later, the exchange rate with the existing currency was fixed. One Rentenmark corresponded to 1 trillion old paper marks." Luther's great achievement lay less in the theoretical planning than in the practical implementation of the currency reform by then under Reich Chancellor Wilhelm Marx. Thanks to Luther's energetic efforts, the currency reform was pushed through under Chancellors Stresemann and Marx against all opposition. And there was plenty of opposition, because Luther's ironclad austerity program included layoffs in the civil service, cuts in social spending, the suspension of government construction projects, and tax increases. These measures were enacted by emergency decree, bypassing parliament. This type of recovery cure was radical, but it worked. Moreover, the German population had already lost all savings during the hyperinflation, which is why the acceptance of these measures was probably higher than one might assume today. The budget was balanced within a few months, the new currency remained stable, and it performed well. The Reich Chancellor's Handbook on page 71 states, "It is no exaggeration to say that Hans Luther was the most successful finance minister in German history." The rescue of the currency was a major achievement for Hans Luther. When the Marx government collapsed at the end of 1924, beginning of 25, the non-partisan, widely respected finance minister was therefore a good choice to lead a government in a time of internal strife. In Hans Mommsen's book, on page 240, it states, "The minority Luther cabinet, formed in mid-January 25 after a crisis lasting several weeks, represented a government of personalities and came about without any ties to the parliamentary groups, after all other coalition possibilities had failed. Ultimately, it rested on the authority of the Reich President, although it received a narrow majority in the vote of confidence, thanks to the SPD's abstention." On January 15, 1925, Luther formed a minority government consisting of the Center Party, the German People's Party DVP, the Bavarian People's Party BVP, and the German National People's Party DNVP. Under Hans Luther, the right-wing conservative DNVP thus participated in government for the first time. The left-liberal German Democratic Party DDP did not join this government, although the DDP's Reichswehr Minister Gessler remained in office, which is why the minority government was 5 seats short of a majority. Luther served for only a few weeks under President Ebert. After Ebert's death, Paul von Hindenburg won the presidential election in the second round. Luther remained chancellor under Hindenburg and initially succeeded in integrating him into the parliamentary system. However, with the Field Marshal's victory and the DNVP's entry into the government, the Weimar Republic had become significantly more right-wing within a few months than it had ever been before. Regarding his governing style, Mommsen states on page 240, "Subsequently, Chancellor Luther developed a distinctly self-confident governing style that pointed in the direction of a chancellor democracy and subjected the governing parties to considerable strain. In foreign policy, tensions eased. Due to the implementation of the Dawes Plan, the French and Belgians fulfilled their obligations and evacuated the Ruhr region in July and August 25. In October 25, the Locarno Treaty was negotiated and signed. This treaty, negotiated between Germany, France, Great Britain, Italy, Belgium, Czechoslovakia and Poland, established a new foundation for Germany's foreign relations, particularly with Western Europe. Germany accepted its western border as final, but was granted the opportunity to work towards a peaceful revision of its eastern border. Furthermore, Germany was to join the League of Nations as an equal partner as quickly as possible. The demilitarization of the Rhineland, already stipulated in the Treaty of Versailles, was reaffirmed in the Locarno Treaty." The significance of the Locarno Treaty should not be underestimated. For the first time since 1914, Germany was once again treated as an equal international partner and no longer as an outcast. This success was based primarily on the tireless work of Foreign Minister Gustav Stresemann. However, the German National People's Party DNVP saw the Locarno Treaty as a betrayal of national interests. After all, Alsace-Lorraine was definitely relinquished. The right-wing conservatives therefore left the government at the end of October 25. Luther had hoped to retain the DNVP in government, however, Alfred Hugenberg, the future DNVP leader, had by then become so influential that his strong pressure was sufficient to remove the DNVP ministers from the government. The DNVP equivocated and now seemed to want to be half government, half opposition, since it still wanted to support Luther's economic policies. Its own electorate benefited from them. However, the DNVP refused to approve the Locarno Treaty. The Locarno Treaty was nevertheless ratified by the Reichstag in November 25, as the SPD and DDP voted in favor. However, one of the SPD's conditions was the complete withdrawal of the DNVP from the government. Consequently, Luther resigned as chancellor after the vote. In the end, the DNVP, the NSDAP, the communist KPD and the right-wing Economic Party voted against Locarno. The formation of a grand coalition, including the SPD, would actually have been the sensible course of action. However, State Secretary Meissner, who was in close proximity to President Hindenburg, thwarted this through his scheming. And so Luther was once again tasked with forming a bourgeois minority cabinet, this time consisting of the Center Party, the Bavarian People's Party BVP, the German People's Party DVP, and the DDP. The government had thus shifted more towards the center. At the end of April 26, Luther continued the policies of the previous governments when he supplemented the 1922 Treaty of Rapallo with the Soviet Union with the Berlin Treaty of Friendship and Neutrality. Therefore, Germany now had political options both in Western Europe and in the East. However, Luther's downfall came as early as May 26 over the Flag Decree. At the beginning of May, President Hindenburg had decreed by emergency order, though at the behest of the Reich Chancellor, that German diplomatic missions abroad should fly not only the black-red-gold flag, but also the black-white-red merchant flag, which consisted of the colors of the old German Empire. Luther had seized upon the idea of conservative German expatriates. However, he underestimated the political explosiveness of the issue. The Republican parties were furious, and the left-liberal German Democratic Party DDP initiated a vote of no confidence against him. Since the German National People's Party DNVP abstained, Luther was brought down. The government was taken over by his predecessor Wilhelm Marx. Apart from the chancellor, no changes were made to the cabinet. Even the flag decree remained in effect, despite the German Democratic Party DDP remaining in government. This decree was not amended even under the SPD-led Grand Coalition of 1928. One might therefore suspect that personal motives against Luther played a greater role than it appears. The Reich Chancellor's Handbook states on page 99, "A non-partisan chancellor, and moreover such an extremely successful non-partisan chancellor as Luther, was bound to appear suspect to the parties in the long run because he fundamentally questioned the system of party democracy." Was it ultimately his success and his lack of party affiliation that led to his downfall? This cannot be definitively proven or disproven, but it could very well be part of the truth. After his fall from power, the embittered Luther initially distanced himself from politics and instead embarked on a trip to South America to clear his head. The retired politician was only 47 years old at the time. Upon his return, he took a position on the board of directors of the Reichsbahn, the German National Railway. From 1928 onward, he also served as chairman of the League for the Renewal of the Reich. This organization aimed to break Prussian dominance and strengthen the central power of the Reich. In 1929, Hans Luther was a candidate proposed by General von Schleicher to lead a bourgeois right-wing cabinet that would replace the SPD-led Grand Coalition. Luther, however, declined. Instead, in March 1930, he replaced Hjalmar Schacht as president of the Reichsbank. During Heinrich Brüning's government, Luther, in his capacity at the Reichsbank, supported Brüning's controversial deflationary policies. Luther refused to acknowledge that the crisis could only be overcome through a government investment program. Like Brüning, he wanted to resume spending only after the crisis had bottomed out. However, he too was unsure how to halt the further decline, the worsening hardship faced by the population, due among other things to mass unemployment and the resulting impoverishment. Was no reason for him to change his policies. Instead, he saw his primary task as maintaining currency stability and preventing a new hyperinflation. Luther remained in office under Chancellors Franz von Papen and Kurt von Schleicher. However, when he opposed the aggressive financing of Hitler's government program, Hitler issued him an ultimatum in March 1933, demanding his resignation in favor of his predecessor Hjalmar Schacht. Luther insisted on the gold standard and demanded fiscal discipline, while the Nazi regime desperately needed money for its job creation programs and rearmament. Schacht was willing to finance this government program. Luther was not, and therefore he had to go. As compensation, Hitler offered him the post of German ambassador to the United States, which Luther accepted. In the United States, Luther was enthusiastically welcomed as the Chancellor of Locarno, and his appointment was seen as a German signal of peace. Luther seemed to have no qualms about using his reputation for the benefit of the Nazi state. The book on the Reich Chancellor states on page 130, "In his posthumously published book from 1964, Before the Abyss 1930-33, President of the Reichsbank in Times of Crisis, he writes candidly, "On that March 10th, I had no doubts as to whether, for fundamental reasons, I should keep myself far from any connection with the Hitler state. Certainly very honest, but further proof that Hans Luther lacked the necessary political finesse in crucial situations in his life." As ambassador to the United States, he attempted, on the one hand, to downplay American criticism of the persecution of the Jews and, on the other hand, to polish the image of the Nazi regime, thereby jeopardizing his good reputation and increasingly encountering rejection. After the 1936 Berlin Olympics, the Nazi leadership seemed to have lost interest in Luther, and he was recalled from his post as ambassador. The now more or less unemployed former chancellor embarked on a world tour, visiting Canada, East Asia, Australia, India, and Egypt. He returned to Germany in 1937 and, not yet 60 years old, was officially retired. He initially lived in Berlin, but later moved to Traunstein in Upper Bavaria. For a time, he gave lectures to Wehrmacht soldiers, but this activity ended when the Nazi Party took over troop morale. Although he was occasionally consulted as an expert on financial matters, he never assumed any official duties. After World War II, in 1948, he became a trustee at a private bank in Munich. He also taught political science at the Munich School of Politics. Furthermore, he was active as an advisor for the 1948 currency reform, drawing on his experiences from 1923. He remained unaffiliated with any political party in the newly formed Federal Republic of Germany, though he was politically close to both the Free Democratic Party FDP and the Christian Democratic Union CDU. He served as a highly valued advisor to Economics Minister Ludwig Erhard, the father of the economic miracle. From 1952 to 55, he chaired the federal government's Committee of Experts for the Reorganization of the Federal Territory. However, the Adenauer government completely ignored the work of this committee, leading to rumors that the then-chancellor had only given the former chancellor this position to prevent Luther from interfering in Bonn's day-to-day politics. In 1960, Luther published his first memoirs, Politician Without a Party. A second book about his time as head of the Reichsbank was published posthumously. Unfortunately, I do not currently have access to either volume. Hans Luther died on May 11, 1962, at the age of 84 in Düsseldorf. A few words about his private life. In 1907, he married Gertrud or Gertrude Wolf, the daughter of the painter Hermann Wolf. The marriage was marked by early tragedies. His first daughter Käthe died in 1908 after just 1 week, and his second daughter Renate died in 1918 at the age of only 8 from the Spanish flu pandemic. Only his daughter Gertraud, born in 1914, and his daughter Eva Marie, born in 1921, survived to adulthood. Gertrude Wolf died on December 2, 1924, after a long and serious illness. Luther had thus endured his difficult term as finance minister during hyperinflation with a seriously ill wife by his side and became chancellor of the Reich approximately 1 month after her death. He then devoted himself primarily to the upbringing and education of his daughters, who were then just 10 and 3 years old. During his time as ambassador to the USA, Gertraude, then around 20 years old, assumed representative duties that would normally have been performed by the ambassador's wife. In November 1953, Luther married Gertrud Sioli, a neurologist living in Düsseldorf. As can be seen, the names Gertrud, Gertrude, and Gertraude appeared quite frequently in Luther's private life. His eldest daughter, Gertraud Luther, died in 1997 and Eva Marie died in 2014.
A few finishing words.
Hans Luther is often overshadowed by bigger names like Gustav Stresemann when it comes to the chancellors of the Weimar Republic. He was not a party politician, which is probably why the successor parties of the Weimar Republic do relatively little to commemorate him. He was, however, a highly capable technocrat and a man of action. One could describe him as someone who always served Germany, regardless of who governed it. As someone who was essentially liberal conservative, but without a party affiliation, and as someone who felt at home in the finance ministry and the central bank. The Stresemann-Luther partnership was arguably one of the most successful government duos of the entire Weimar Republic. First with Stresemann as Chancellor and Luther as Finance Minister, and later with Luther as Chancellor and Stresemann as Foreign Minister. Since hyperinflation remains a major source of anxiety for Germans to this day, I think it appropriate to remember the individuals who overcame this catastrophe. And that includes Hans Luther, the non-partisan Finance Minister and Chancellor.
Thank you. This was History Lost in Time.